Okay, another bit of an experiment here. So tonight I'm driving now to the Preston Hackspace meeting. So there's a few people in Preston have come together, and I think Jade Lawrence is the main person who's steering it, trying to form a hackspace in Preston. Now, you may know already that there are hackspaces in lots of major cities around the UK and around the world as well. So some of the ones that to me leap to mind is there's the Manchester Hackspace, Nottingham Hackspace, where else? Sheffield. I know there's definitely one in Sheffield, and a lots of big cities have them. Preston is a fairly kind of medium-sized city, but it doesn't currently have a hackspace. So a group of people have got together recently to say, should Preston have a hackspace? And one piece of advice that's always been given is, hackspace, it's about the community really. So you need to start off, rather than acquiring a premises or a space for your community, start off by building the community and then worry about the space later on. So a lot of hackspaces have a permanent space, and a little bit like a gym, people pay a monthly membership fee to go along and make use of the services there, like laser printers, laser cutters, laser printers, I don't know where that came from, and 3D printers as well. I think that's what I was thinking of. And then they also, a lot of them, like the London Hackspace and Manchester Hackspace, they have like a regular kind of open evening or open day where people who are not members can still come along and have a look around and maybe even use the facilities as well. So I'm on my way to the Preston Hackspace meeting now, and this is, I think, the second meeting, and the plan is to then meet every 2 weeks, and I think that's going to take place on a Tuesday in Preston. So I'm going to pause the recording in just a moment, but what this particular podcast, I'm using Audio Boom to record it. I used to use Audio Boom for quite a few years, I think about 3 years, and I'll record about 260 episodes. But then it shifted from iOS over to Android, and I found that as I did that, the Android app didn't work very well. So I'm recording this podcast partly using Audio Boom just to see how well it works, because the last few times I used Audio Boom, all of the recording I'd done crashed and I lost it, and there wasn't any way to recover it. So I'm now going to press the pause button and then resume with some interviews. Right, I just listened to that a little bit back just to see how it sounds. So I'm not at the hackspace yet, I'm still on the way to the hackspace. I'm driving to Preston. That's why you'll hear some background noise in the car, like the rumble and stuff. In fact, if you're finding that really annoying, that rumble and its effect on the quality, maybe send me a message and say it sounds awful, don't ever do that again, and I'll bear that in mind. So I'm sat at traffic lights at the moment. Now, the thing I was going to mention as Audio Boom, so far it all seems to be working quite well. I've recorded a section, paused it, played it back just to listen to it. I'm a big fan of podcasts because it's a great way you can share things without having to look at things and worry all about the video and all of the bandwidth. I'm going to go over some bumpy bits of road now in a moment. Bumpy bit there. Okay. They're doing some resurfacing here, and the road surface is a bit rough. The nice things about Audio Booms I found was, using that compared to some other apps, was I liked the idea that you could just press one button, record it, pause, record, pause, and then when you're finished, there's a post button and it goes online straight away. I went a stage further and I managed to do the technical bit that means people can then find the podcasts in iTunes, which then means it's got probably a little bit more posterity than just being in the Audio Boom app. And what else can I say? It's nice, you can tag it with certain things, you can add it, you can add an image or two in. If you use something like what tool do I use one of them photo collage tools, that means you can take a number of images and stitch them all together. That works quite neatly as well. Now I need to negotiate and move into another lane. So I'll resume in a few moments. Now I'm just about a minute away from the Continental, which is the pub in Preston where Preston Hackspace are having their meeting tonight. Now, I can't see into the future. I don't know exactly what's going to happen over the next couple of hours or so, but what I expect I'm going to do is go round. I've brought some Raspberry Pis with me. I've brought my Dalek, which I've been hacking. And I'm planning to talk to a few people there, and I'll ask them about why they've come, what they're hoping to do, what they think a hackspace should look like, and that kind of thing. So stay tuned. So I'm here at Preston Hackspace, and I've bumped into two people, and I'm going to ask them to tell me who they are.
My name's Jade Lawrence. I'm sort of running the Hackspace a little bit, but only in a nominal fashion. Everyone's running because it's a community group.
Ah, and you are?
I'm Andrew Poole. This is my first time here, so everything's new to me.
Ah, very good.
It's all very exciting.
And why did you come?
I came here because I like tinkering with things. I've got loads of stuff piled up at home. And I like the idea of a Hackspace, somewhere where people can come together and they can share their experiences, share their tools, share their bits and bobs.
Great.
And so, this is where I've come.
So this is your first time here. Jade, have you been to a Hackspace before?
Yeah, when I lived down in London, I was part of the London Hackspace. And since trying to start this one, I've also been visiting a few others. I've been up to the Lancaster and Morecambe Maker Hackspace. And I'm looking around to see what other guys are doing, trying to pick up tips for here.
So why do you think Preston hasn't had a Hackspace until now?
I think about 2 years ago they tried, but I think nothing inherently is wrong with Preston for a Hackspace. I think the main guy who was running it just moved down to London, so it just fell apart that way.
Okay, and are you starting to feel like there's enough power here to make this thing happen this time?
Definitely. Yeah. We're still gathering at the moment. We have about 15 to 20 members. Tonight was not that great a turnout, but it'll get better. But the people are passionate, and that's the main thing. If people see the passion, it'll grow. That's the main thing.
And do you think it needs a space like a building or something that in order for the space to grow, the community to grow?
The space is definitely the ultimate goal. We don't need a space at this point. Well, we wish we had one, but obviously it needs to grow without the space. So if I said yes, we would be doomed. So
right.
It doesn't need a space, but we ultimately want a space because we want to have tools, we want to have the equipment to allow people to innovate, to make things.
That's so the space is like the end in mind, the goal you're aiming towards, which you can use as a carrot to kind of dangle in front of people and encourage them to come along, but really you need to build a community first.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And Andrew, have you heard of Hackspaces before? Have you been to one, or is this?
I've heard of them. I've talked to some people who attended other Hackspaces, but I've never actually been to a Hackspace. But it looks like a great idea. That's the thing.
Now you strike me from something you brought as though you might already be a bit of a hacker. You've opened this weird and wonderful wooden box on the table, and what's it got inside it?
It's got an old keyboard in it. It's a keyboard from a BBC Micro, which is a 1980s computer, and basically the computer was dead, but the keyboard worked, so I'd like to keep it going. It feels lovely, and I can plug it into whatever. It's a USB keyboard now.
But what you've got it plugged into at the moment is the Raspberry Pi.
It's the Raspberry Pi,
So it's quite a nice segue to go from the BBC Micro keyboard into the Raspberry Pi. It's like all we need now is a micro bit plugged into the Raspberry Pi.
It is the family tree.
Close the circle. So if you were coming to a regular Hackspace, what do you think you would carry on with that project, or what do you think you would get from coming to a Hackspace regularly?
I think just seeing what other people are doing and getting ideas. I think sharing ideas is what it's about. It's an interesting thing. Whereas otherwise, we're stuck at home tinkering on our own projects,
right.
and you know, it's when other people see what we're doing that then we get ideas to spread between us.
So you say it's not just about having a physical space; it can be actually bringing people together. And back to you, Jade. Like, what do you think the barrier is now for the space, the community, to achieve its ultimate aim? What are the kind of main barriers or obstacles now that you think we'll have to overcome in order to make the dream come true?
We need more people. More people means potentially more funding. We have more momentum. And we need funding, obviously, which will come with the people. And then we just need a space. I think once we have a space, that'd be great. But even now, tonight, we have people with their projects here. I have robots walking around. We have, like, other random things. I just bought, like, a little Arduino that I'm trying to play with. So I'm a programmer, but I really want to learn more of electronics. So this is what I'm hoping to get out of a Hackspace, to learn more about.
Do you think there's a danger that if you are that kind of the one who's pushing it most, and if for one reason or another your circumstances change and you can't focus as much of your energy
on this that it might just dwindle. Yeah. How would you prevent that from happening, really?
There is that risk. The way that I prevent it is to have people that I try and get to help me with things, try and offload some of the responsibility. Whenever I sort of introduce myself to anyone at the Hackspace, I say, I'm the one who started it up, but please help me run it.
Right.
That's the thing. I don't want to run the whole thing. So hopefully people will be able to help with this. I have a family here in Preston. I have a house, so hopefully I'm here to stay. So that shouldn't be a problem. But yeah, we will try and make a plan if something like that does happen.
And hopefully it grows. Thank you both. Thank you, Andrew, and thank you, Jade.
Sure, thank you, Anna.
Okay. So who are you?
My name's Andrew.
What do you do?
I'm a programmer by trade.
Right. So you mainly do software.
Yeah.
So why have you got a pile of hardware in front of you?
Well, today I'm making a captive sensor. It's like how your phone works on the touch screen.
Wow.
So what it's doing, I've got my...
You've got a breadboard there in front of you with a number of components plugged in.
It's a Shrimpit Arduino.
Shrimpit.
And I've soldered all the components on the back.
Wow.
So it's easy to just plug in and out.
So you've got an IC that looks like it's got 28 pins, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that. It's got 14 down each side, is it?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it's basically an Arduino, just a chip. So what I've got is, how it works, basically, you've got a bit of tinfoil, and it's got connected to two pins on the Arduino.
Which I can see using crocodile clips to join them
very
over.
Very professional.
Yeah.
And what it's doing is it's timing how long it takes for the signal to reach back.
Okay.
So what it does, it sends a pulse out, it measures how long, and then it produces a value. What happens is your body acts as like a capacitor.
Okay.
So the closer you get, you start altering the timing.
Wow. So I can see on your screen, you've got this very low value, and as your hand got closer, it suddenly jumped up like by magnitude of thousands.
Yeah. It's a bit. So the closer you get, the quicker it, the lower the value gets, or higher actually.
Yes,
It's a bit sporadic at the moment, so,
So you could like turn that into something like a musical instrument?
You could.
Or it could be...
A 3D controller, so if you got, I think somebody had already done that, where you
different zones.
X, Y, and Z.
Wow. Yeah. So what's made you want to do this kind of thing?
I just always liked tinkering.
Yeah.
Some, I think it spawns from when my dad used to, because he was a teacher, he used to bring like the Spectrum home. And
the Sinclair Spectrum.
Yeah, and all the printers and plotters and the electronic boards and stuff. So we used to always do like electronic projects and stuff.
So is this your first time to come to the Preston Hackspace meeting?
No, it's my second time.
Okay.
But
so
it has been run before, but I've attended there. But,
and what was different last time?
They had 3D printers. There was quite a few more people,
right?
But at the moment, everyone's on holiday.
That's right. Okay. And if there was a permanent space that was Preston Hackspace, could you see yourself going along
definitely,
regularly?
Yeah.
What would be the attraction to you? What would make you want to keep going along?
I think it's because I won't get in trouble for making a mess at home.
Right. Yeah.
It's a bit of a getting together, meeting people as well. It's a commute, a social thing as well as making, and you learn new things off other people.
That's right. It's not just like if you were doing this at home on the kitchen table and you were doing it on your own, and then somebody says, come on, time to pack everything away. Like, whereas instead, I'm coming over and I'm going, wow, that looks incredible. And
And if you're stuck on something, you could spend three hours trying to fix it, and somebody
else can spend 3 hours trying to fix it.
Or they come up
to
you and go, oh yeah, that's how you do it, and it's fixed. So.
Great. Okay. So I'm just going to find the pause button. So now I have in front of me Arthur Garlick, Ben Horn, and Dave Buckley.
That's right.
Yeah. So Arthur, this isn't the first Hackspace you've been to. You're a man of many Hackspaces you've travelled to.
Well, it does seem that way, but actually, about 2 years ago, I didn't even know that there was a social scene available to me in the makerspaces.
Ah, okay.
And I had my own little makerspace at home, which was a bench, and I did my own little electronics experiments for a couple of decades, actually.
Well, that must be quite
young.
Peaceful and solitary.
It was peaceful and solitary and working everything out from the net. But then I went to my first, it was Manchester Maker Faire, And then I realized there's lots of other people out there the same as me. And since then, you're right, I've visited kind of, a lot of makerspaces and it's become my main thing.
So which ones have you been to?
My home one is Blackpool. Yeah. And I've looked at other ones like Lamb, which is Morecambe. And there's another one actually in Lancaster, which is more based around a commune, and more of a way of living. As we're talking, a robot is getting up. He's just fallen over. Oh, no, he's crawling. So you come to places like this and you're never quite sure what you're going to see. Like, I didn't think that I'd see a robot that could make itself fall over and then pick itself up. Wow. It's quite amazing.
So tell us about the Blackpool. Is this some fantastic, like, industrial facility or something that you're...
Not at all. It started off, there was a business in the centre of Blackpool recycling PCs. It was a bit of a social thing where people who might find it more difficult to afford their own computer were able to sort of like a rental deal where they got a machine, they paid a small amount for it each month. And it was looked after. If anything went wrong, it got fixed.
Was there a Linux user group there as well?
There was a Linux user group there. And so there was a space there for this business and with lots of benches, soldering irons, lots of old kit to play with. Mm-hmm. And we just met there and really... But it's more about social scene. So I always come to these things and I've always bring something like a laptop and some electronics to play with. And I find that I don't actually do what I came to do. I actually find that... I talk constantly for the whole period of time, and that's great because you get new ideas. And you go home, you've got time to do it.
So is this your first time to come to Preston?
To Preston Headspace, absolutely. Yeah.
What advice would you be giving to people from Preston? Like from what you've seen at the other spaces, what kind of things?
It's about being friendly and not scaring people off, isn't it? I think there's lots of people out there actually that of all levels that want to get involved. And a lot of beginners that want to come into the hobby, but it's such a difficult thing to get into, and I think we've just got to be very approachable.
And do you think it's more about the space or the community?
It's people.
Yeah.
I'm not bothered whether we're in a field or a shed. In fact, varying it would be nice. It'd be nice to sit under a tree and have a chat, wouldn't it, with some robots outside. That wouldn't bother me at all. Sometimes when you want to make something, you need a pillar drill. You need a lathe, you need a 3D printer, so yeah.
So I believe you're holding in front of you one of Dave Buckley's walking robots, which is absolutely immensely complicated but beautifully designed artifact which can walk, and it's got these giant toes that help it balance.
Yeah, it's got overlapping toes. The toes overlap its center line, which means that it doesn't need to push off with its other foot and it doesn't need to shift its weight. And for the last year, since I met David Buckley actually a year ago, I've spent a lot of time wondering how to get a robot to pick its foot up.
Wow.
Because it's actually sounds so simple, and we all know about it since we're toddlers, but to actually get a robot to pick its foot up, it's quite an interesting challenge, whether you shift your weight or you have overlapping toes like this one, or you use what we do as humans is we use the foot that we are picking up, we actually push off with that.
Right.
So, and that pushes our weight over to the other side, and then we lift that foot. I don't know. I prefer the robots that shift weight. I think there's something more... It's unnatural, actually. It's not what we actually do. But there's something that's apparently more natural about it. I think that's a contradiction in terms.
I'll go and ask Ben and David about some more robot stuff. That's great. Brilliant. Thank you, Arthur. So, Dave... You've created these robots, which you've brought along.
Yes.
And as I understand, Ben, you're studying robotics as well.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah? So, Ben, is it the kind of things you would normally see? Because like, you're at UCLan, aren't you? You're studying...
Yeah, well, I'm just starting my first year now. Yeah. I've just done a foundation year. So I've not really got very far into the course yet. But this is something that... this sort of stuff.
So you'd expect to be building, designing these kind of things in your course, do you think?
Probably not. No, not walking ones like this. But this field of robotics is something that really interests me.
And Dave, you're shaking your head. Why are you shaking your head?
Because in universities they don't build robots. To build something like this, you're building an experimental prototype. And it seems to be that the way that they do robotics and engineering in universities is so that the students get experience in writing reports that they'll have to write in industry. So that, and they're doing everything like they would do in industry. So you know, they learn how to use CAD programs, they learn how to do builds of materials, and learn how to
So it's building up skills and knowledge. Yeah.
But really, they're a bunch of kids who don't know how to build anything. So all they've learned is media studies, not robotics.
But couldn't somebody argue in what you've done, because I imagine this is part of your hobby, building these robots, that there's a lot, there's a high loss, high amount of failure in what you're doing?
No, not normally.
No, okay.
Because after a while, you get to guess good. In real life, I build animatronic figures. I build robots if you want.
Right.
But I build animatronic. I used to build special effects for the London theatres.
Okay.
Like Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, I built camels for Joseph.
Dragons with blinking eyes and...
Well, anything like that. Okay. You know, but the London theatres, I used to build the special effects. And you've just got to guess good because there isn't time to do it twice. Never, you know. So you just learn to get it right by experience.
Wow. And you've brought some of these along. So you've travelled from Oldham to get here.
Yeah.
Is there nothing like this in Oldham? To...
There's a hack space in Manchester, but they're much more interested in huddling around their laptops. I don't know what they're doing. I think they're all sending messages to each other, but yeah. I don't know. You know, they get around. So I visited the hack space. I visited the Fab Lab in Manchester, which is a good place. There's a group of us who drop in on Saturday and chat. And they've got
Fab Lab's very well equipped, isn't it, in terms of equipment? No. Okay.
Unfortunately, the Fab Labs was started by a guy called Gershenfeld. I think that's what he is, at MIT. And one of the things he says, if you have to use glue or fasteners, it's a failure. And the Fab Lab are taking this to heart, so that everything's got to...
Screw?
No screws, no glues. So there's no hand tools.
Ah.
Which was great for his students at MIT doing engineering, because he's training them to be manufacturing engineers. So when they go out to industry, they don't want glues and screws. They want them to clip it together and get it out the door, which is, mass producing things. But it doesn't teach them how to do experimental engineering. And so the Fab Lab, the people who go to the Fab Lab, they're not going to be get a job at manufacturing engineering. They're not... At that stream, they really need to be taught how to use like basic hand tools as well as the computer control machines to be able to make stuff. And
these creations you've brought along are absolutely incredible. They almost seem like living, breathing creatures that are just in front of us. You must have spent hours building something like this.
Well, the building time pales into insignificance compared to the programming time.
Right.
Believe me. You know, but this was started back in 2002.
Gosh. So you don't measure it so much in hours as in years.
And it's...
I was watching it before. It seems to have this sort of self-learning going on as it moves. It's, can I walk faster? Yes, I can, so I'm going to carry on.
Yeah, it's got... This is Freya, and it's got sensors on. So it's got optical sensors, which are measuring reflected light. So if there's light reflected from an object, from these LEDs...
It could have a collision.
There's an obstacle there.
Yeah.
So it can avoid obstacles. It's also got...
Microswitches on the toes.
So it knows can tell if the foot is down.
Yeah.
If the foot isn't down, it kicks around a bit to try and make the foot down, and when it is down, then it will start to move.
So it has like a closed loop in it. And I saw mercury tilt switches at the back, so it knows what angle it's
going to. If it's fallen over,
yeah,
it can get it.
Wow.
So if it's fallen over front, upside down, or backwards, it can detect which way up it is and get up. The same with Boulder. Boulder doesn't have the switches fitted yet, so I had to do it manually. Tell it, you're upside down, and it will get up.
So what I'm interested to ask Ben, if you're signed up for a course in robotics, do you really need to come to something like a hackspace? Surely you're going to get everything you need from the university.
Well, I think as David pointed out, that university learning isn't the only and definitely not always the best way for learning a lot of things like this.
So why did you choose specifically a course in robotics?
Mainly from watching Robot Wars as a kid, to be quite honest. That's what got me interested in robotics, and it wasn't until about 2-3 years ago that I found out that you could actually do courses in robotic engineering.
Do you know what? I need to mention to you, down in Cambridge, there's a Raspberry Jam, they call it the Cam Jam,
yeah.
And they had last year, and they're repeating it again this year, almost a Robot Wars, but they called it Pi Wars. So these are robots controlled by Raspberry Pi, and this is in December. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to be going down. I need to see if there's some other people who want to travel down. But there's all sorts of wonderful creations, mostly powered by Raspberry Pis, and there's like assault courses and challenges for you to do. So that's Pi Wars. It's about the 4th of December or something like that. I have to check in Cambridge at the... Yeah, down there. Absolutely, Google Pi Wars.
There's not much on the internet about it.
There will be if you dig around and find it.
Not on the website, though.
So, Simon Walters at Simple Sci on Twitter.
Hello.
You're here at Preston Hackspace.
Yes,
been
I am.
Before.
Yes, I have been.
And why do you keep coming back? What's so great about
it? Well, I'm really keen to see a Hackspace set up properly here at Preston, where we can have access to things like 3D printers and laser cutters, and get together and, you know, hack away at projects.
But can you not just buy all that stuff and just keep it in your garage or somewhere at home?
Yeah, but I can't afford that. So what we need to do is share the cost out amongst
the cooperative.
No good. You know, I couldn't afford a laser cutter that might be £1,000, but maybe if we get 40 of us together and put some money into a kit, maybe we can get one that we could all use together.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. So there we are. That's an evening at Preston Hackspace, which is not a space, it's a community. And the next one is in September. If you want to find out more specifically about this Preston one, then just look for @PrestonHack on Twitter. If you're not in Preston, but you're somewhere else like Manchester, Leeds, Newcastle, Gateshead, wherever you are in the country or in the world, I bet there's a Hackspace probably less than an hour away from where you live. Thank you very much for listening. This has been me, Alan O'Donoghue, @TechnoTeacher on Twitter, TekNoTeacher. Let me know what you think about this podcast, whether it was useful, and also the audio quality at the beginning, whether that was something you could bear with or not. Thank you very much, and goodbye.